Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be talking with retired Summit County Human Resources Director Brian Bellamy. Later on, U.S. Ski and Snowboard Communications Manager Laura Carlton has an update on the teams. And finally, the director of the Christian Center of Park City's Counseling Center, Leah Harder, highlights some of the services that the center offers. Taking a look at local news now, a Park City man has been arrested after allegedly aiming his SUV at a woman and pinning her against her own vehicle during a confrontation in the drive-through lane at the Kimball Junction McDonald's. The suspect is facing more troubles with the law, including charges of ripping off the auto rental agency where he once worked and violating a plea agreement with Third District Court related there to criminal charges going back 3 years. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more.
Charges of aggravated assault, DUI, reckless driving, and failure to stop at an injury accident have been filed against 51-year-old Sean Patrick Dalton. The Summit County Attorney's Office has also asked for a no-bail warrant and pretrial detention for the defendant. Charging documents say that last Tuesday, December 29th, shortly before 10 p.m., a woman was entering the McDonald's drive-thru when a man in a white SUV tried to jump into the lane ahead of her. When she honked at him, he drove the front end of his vehicle into hers. When the woman got out to talk to the SUV driver, identified as Dalton, he drove at her, pinned her against her own vehicle, and kept accelerating. Several witnesses yelled at Dalton, and he backed up and fled the scene. One witness grabbed the suspect's license plate, causing it to bend. The witness followed in his own vehicle. The criminal information says that Dalton drove on and off the freeway several times, trying to lose the witness. The witness ultimately located Dalton's vehicle at the parking lot of the Best Western. Officers saw Dalton's vehicle had the bent license plate and found handprints on the dust of the hood from the victim. She was treated by medical personnel after the incident. Officers also reported that Dalton's breath smelled of alcohol and he had poor balance. He refused tests for field sobriety and breath alcohol, but a warrant was obtained to take a blood draw. Dalton was arrested nearly a week before that. In a separate case, he faces charges of theft and communications fraud. The criminal information there says that over the past year, while working for the Hertz rental business in Park City, Dalton rented vehicles to customers in return for cash payments made to his own personal accounts. Charging documents allege that Dalton made rentals to six customers for a total of $4,260. Hertz told officers that Dalton had rented out 35 vehicles with no official contracts. 21 of the vehicles had been recovered by Hertz all over the United States. 14 have not been recovered as of the date Dalton was arrested, Wednesday the 23rd. On that day, a Park City police officer was conducting surveillance on the residence of Dalton's wife in the basin. The officer saw Dalton exit and drive off into a Land Rover identified as one of the stolen vehicles. Dalton was detained and taken to the Summit County Jail, but subsequently was released. He had been fired by Hertz on November 23rd. As it happens, on that same date, Dalton entered into a plea of abeyance agreement in 3rd District Court. He pled guilty to a theft of services charge after being arrested in late 2017 for unlawfully using a credit card. Under that plea agreement, he had to maintain good behavior and have no further violations of the law for 2 years. The county has now requested the no bail warrant for Dalton, arguing that there is clear evidence he presents a substantial danger to the safety of the public. On Monday, January 4th, Dalton has an evidentiary hearing in 3rd District Court on the McDonald's incident. He will also appear in court January 25th on an order to show cause hearing, where the judge could set aside his previous plea deal from November and impose a prison sentence. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
It's 8:16. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, after a 25-year tenure, December 31st was the final day of work for Brian Bellamy, as Summit County's Human Resources Director. He joins us now on the first Monday after retirement for a look back at his tenure. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Well, how are you doing? How's retirement so far?
I don't know yet.
Okay. You still...
I guess we'll find out how it goes.
So let's talk a little bit about just the kind of your history here. When you started in Summit County, when was that?
In October of 95.
Okay. And what brought you to the county?
Well, I've worked both in private and public sector, and I had been in the private sector and wanted to get back into the public sector. I enjoy working with the public and helping build communities, and I've always been a fan of John Kennedy, and I'm old enough to remember when he asked not what you can do for your country, but what you can do for your country, and I wanted to give back to my community.
So do you live in Summit County, or have you been commuting all these years?
I have been commuting, but I do count Summit County as my community.
Yeah. Yeah. So thinking about that over the last 25 years, how has the county changed in the 25 years that you've been driving up and down the hill?
Oh, it's substantially grown. When I came to work about 95, there's about, 23,000 residents. And now there's, 44,000 residents? And so county government has had to grow along with that to serve our residents. I mean, I look at the programs we're doing now. It's a lot different than 25 years ago.
Yeah. What about just the traffic that you've seen?
There is much more traffic. For me, there's a lot of traffic that comes down when I'm going up the hill. And then when I'm coming down the hill, a lot of those who live in the Summit County area are going back up the hill to their homes.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more traffic, a lot less seeing of wildlife now than there used to be.
Hmm. Now you have served through the three-member county commission form of government and then the council manager form of government. Can you talk a little bit about the good and bad points of each?
Yeah, oh boy, there's good and bad for both of them, you know, with the old commission form, because they're distinctly different forms of government, because with the commission, they were both executive and legislative branches. And so they were in the courthouse a lot more, or worked with the employees a lot more. That also got some problems where they would try to direct, and I remember we had one snafu with one of the county commissioners that caused real problems, and he didn't bother to get enough votes to make a change in some things, and we had to put things back. And so you have that problem, but with the new council, you know, you do have the professional manager who's now Tom Fisher, and you get five people representing the community from different viewpoints. To me, the more viewpoints you have, the better you can get things going for the community.
So what are the downsides then to the current form? It seems like it's better managed and more representation.
It is. I think I don't know if there's any real true downsides to it. I can say it now. I think meetings go a little bit longer because instead of having three people needing to speak, you have five that need to speak. To me, it's a very effective form of government. To me, one downside is council does not know the day-to-day, but they really don't need to know the day-to-day because they're the legislative branch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have also done a couple of stints as interim county manager. Was that more than the twice that I can think of?
No, I did it once. I did it for 15 months, 3 months while the commission was still there. And then the next year until Bob Jasper came on board in January. So it's for a 15-month period.
Okay, so just the one. I think during that time, that we also saw the negotiation of the Canyons Village Development Agreement?
We did. We did. That was a stressful but a wonderful time.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you feel like you had the tools and the talent that was needed to make a decision to lead a decision of that magnitude?
Absolutely. Because we were small enough and I was involved in enough of county government. Because I've just not always focused. I've been at Summit County in HR. They've given me the opportunities to work in other areas. And so I understand, and it takes, if you listen and you listen to advice and listen to the public, you generally get to the right decision.
Yeah. At least once, maybe this was the more, that you were the county's dog catcher. How come that happened?
Yeah, they asked me to be. That was one of the times that the county gave me the opportunity to go outside of human resources. There was a transition. Animal control used to be under the sheriff's office, and they wanted to pull it away from the sheriff's office, put it underneath the county manager, was Bob Jasper at the time. And Bob asked me to go in there. We had a few hiccups in there with some employees, and things just were not running as smoothly as they could have done. And so Bob asked me to go in there and work in animal control, which was great because we were able to get them a new renovated shelter, which could keep more animals so that we could also move to keep all healthy, adoptable animals and help rescue them. But it was one of those opportunities that they asked for me to do something different, and it was a great time.
Yeah, were you glad to get back to the HR office, or was that?
I love human resources, Leslie. I'm a lucky boy. I've shared with people that I never wanted to be a peace officer or a firefighter. I always wanted to be the person who gave other people jobs, and. So I've been a lucky boy to spend my whole career in the human resources field.
Yeah. So kind of looking back, I mean, how do you think the county has treated its employees?
The county is very good to their employees. You know, the county employees, they're paid fairly. They have great benefits. You know, like most people, they always want more money, but you've got limited dollars, and we cannot sell more widgets, and we don't always like raising taxes, and so we have to live within the means of the revenues which we can collect. But the county has treated very well. I mean, a year and a half ago, the county passed a parental leave policy so that both parents could take times off at the birth or adoption of a child. The county was one of the first to put into place protections for LGBTQ employees. And only for the employees, they went beyond that, is they also put in protections for those who identify sexually differently, for rent and housing and things like this. So I think the county council has done a lot for employees and a lot for the public.
Part of that, I think, may just be the fact that all five of our county councilors are considered Democrats. Would that be different if we had a little bit more diversity on the council, politically speaking?
I don't think so, Leslie, because when we passed the code and the policies for, the LGBTQ, we even had Dave Ure on the council. And Dave Chirrut, Dave Ure, is a diehard Republican, but he voted in favor of that because it was the right thing to do. And I think people, when they understand, will make the right decision.
For the last, 9-10 months now, I don't believe county employees got raises or bonuses, or perhaps they did, as a result of just the budget cutbacks. Is that the case? And they're okay with
that's
it?
That's true. What we did happen last year, Leslie, is we're going on and we give employees a cost of living a year ago, January, and started our merit increases. And then when COVID hit and we realized that revenues were going south, Tom and the county council essentially said we're not doing any more merit increases. And so from April on, employees did not receive merit increases. So that's true. So they got a little bit of a bump last year, but not the full bump they should have received.
Okay, but the county was able to sustain the cost of living increase that they had given them prior to that.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
So from your perspective, how has the county staff reacted during this COVID time?
You know, Leslie, I think they've been remarkable. With all the adversities we've had this year between, you know, earthquakes, COVID, and all sorts of craziness, it has made me proud to be a Summit County employee, because I watched that staff as they jumped into the fray and do what is right for the community. Summit County, the citizens are well served by Summit County government and its employees. We have, you know, I work for the largest county in the state of Utah, and I would stack Summit County's employees up against Salt Lake's any time of the day or night. To dedication, care, and knowledge. But those employees have stepped into the fray and have gotten to work, have gotten their jobs done, picked up more responsibilities to help us get through COVID. We're very fortunate to have the caliber of employees we do.
So what's next for you?
Well, I've got to figure that out. I do want to tend back to my garden. I love gardening. I love to grow hibiscus flowers, those large tropical flowers, and I want to expand my hibiscus patch and get back to growing a few other things. Got to replenish the soil in my yard. It's been kind of worn out because I haven't been able to take care of it as much. And in full disclosure, I'd love to go work at a bookstore. I love books. I love words. And I'd like to just go find a little part-time job at a bookstore and help people find good things to read.
Sounds great. So how's the new guy working out, Dave Warnock? I guess he had some time with
David
you.
David Warnock, he's wonderful. You know, he comes with a real good history in human resources. He comes out of Unified Police Department. He understands public employment law. He will be a real good asset for the county.
Great. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, Leslie, there's one other thing I just want to mention, and it's I wanted to thank you and Bruffy. I've dealt with the two of you now for a number of years, and you've always been willing to ask the fair but hard question. And unlike a lot of media now who's trying to push an agenda, you've always been willing to report, but you've never shied away from the hard question. And you've been fair about it, and I truly appreciate that. I hope the community recognizes what a jewel they have in you and Bruffy at KPCW.
Well, sure appreciate that, Brian. Have fun in the garden and in reading books. Sounds like a delightful life.
Yeah, it'll be grand.
Yeah. Okay, take care. Thanks again, Brian. Good luck.
Thank you, Leslie.
That is retired Summit County Human Resources Director Brian Bellamy. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:31 now. Good morning. And with a recap of the U.S. ski and snowboard teams, on the phone with us, Laura Carlton, Communications Manager. Good morning, Laura.
Morning, Leslie. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. So let's kick off with the Alpine team. Great downhill taking place in Bormio, Italy over the weekend.
Yes. Well, on last Tuesday, December 29th.
Oh, I just saw it on the weekend.
Single.
Okay.
all the days blend together, no worries. Last Tuesday, Ryan Cochran-Siegel ended a 14-year drought, becoming the first American male to win a World Cup Super G since Bodie Miller in 2006. RCS, as he's known, he's the son of 1972 Olympic slalom champion Barbara Ann Cochran. He's been steadily building up to this. He injured his left knee in 2003. 2013 during the World Champs in Austria. He's had multiple surgeries, thousands of hours spent in the gym. He's just one of the most intensely focused and coachable athletes on the team. And he thrilled downhill fans again on Wednesday, the next day, December 30th. He took seventh place in that race, skiing one of the fastest runs, and he had a couple of incredible recoveries throughout that run. So really fun to watch. The men's speed team has an extended break over this new year, and they head to Switzerland for competition January 8th through 10th. And the tech men set back up again in Croatia with a night slalom on January 6th. So really amazing results again from the Alpine crew. It's been an incredible start to the winter season so far, and we're so grateful to be competing on snow during such a crazy year. And over on the women's side, on December 29th, just a banner day to finish out 2020, Michaela Schifrin took third place in the slalom in Austria. And Nina O'Brien had a career best with a ninth place in that race. So in the last 46 slalom races, Michaela has finished on the podium 43 times. However, the competition keeps getting better and better. The women are skiing faster and faster. So she acknowledges she still has work to do every day on her mindset to stay competitive. And a fun fact, the last time two American women were in the top 10 in a slalom was in 2016 in Crans, Montana, Switzerland. Michaela won that event and Racy Steeler was in eighth. We also had some incredible competition yesterday during the night slalom in Zagreb. Michaela finished just off the podium in fourth place, but we had four women skiing in the second run, and that's the first time since 2007 that four women made the flip, and that was also in Zagreb. So again, just some incredible results coming from that crew. Looking forward to 2021 and what it brings for the rest of the team. There's a night slalom scheduled on January 12th in Flacco for the women, so that's what's up next for those athletes.
Okay. Even more phenomenal, though, were the results from the cross-country team. Let's talk about those.
Correct. Yeah, it's just, really incredible. We are right in the middle of the 15th annual FIS Tour de Ski that kicked off January 1st. For those unfamiliar, the Tour de Ski is a 10-day, 8-day stage event. It's been held annually since 2007 season, and it's modeled off the Tour de France of cycling. So Rosie Brennan and Jesse Diggins made history. They sit 1-2 overall in the standings for the competition, with Jesse in first and Rosie in second. Jesse opened the Tour de Ski with a third place finish in the sprint on Friday. Rosie was fifth. And in Saturday's 10K Classic, Jesse was third and Rosie was sixth. But the real story was Sunday's third stage, a 10K freestyle pursuit. Jesse came into that race second overall. Rosie was fourth overall. Jesse started 19 seconds back from the then race leader, Sweden's Linz Vaughn, and Sweden's Frida Karlsson and Rosie started 20 and 22 seconds back, respectively. That trio caught Lynn on the second of the four laps, and at the midway point of the race, Frida, Jesse, Rosie held a 24-second advantage over Lynn. The final lap is where the magic happened. Frida set the pace, but Jesse launched her attack, and she enjoyed the fastest skis prepared by the U.S. service team. Rosie followed, and the two were separated by a couple of seconds, and they put a further 5 seconds into Frida, who finished third. And this was history. Jesse and Rosie are the first ever American female cross-country skiers to finish 1-2 in a World Cup race. Rosie continues to lead the overall FIS World Cup cross-country standings and the overall World Cup distance standings. So today is a rest day for the Tour de Ski. Stage 4 picks back up tomorrow with a 10K freestyle for the women and a 15K freestyle for the men in Toblach, Italy. And that location holds a special place for Jesse. She won a World Cup stage race there in 2017, which she shared the podium with her teammate, Sadie Mobe Bjornsson. So lots happening for cross country, many races coming up this week. The schedule information and how to watch is all on our website. And we'll look forward to another update from that stage race next Monday.
Okay, let's look at the freestyle teams.
Yeah, the freestyle team, Moguls, is currently split between the UOP and training in Colorado. Those athletes have a bit of a break in their World Cup schedule. The next event for them is the Deer Valley event in February. But Aerials is actually competing in three events this week. There's two NORAMs scheduled for January 5th and 6th at the Utah Olympic Park. And then there's U.S. Nationals and Junior Nationals on Saturday, January 9th at Utah Olympic Park as well. These events are held in conjunction with Park City Snowboard, Ski and Snowboard, sorry. And we're just so grateful, again, for the cooperation of the community and the host venue to be able to provide competition. It is a bit unusual that the entire U.S. national team would be competing in a NORAM, but, you know, during a year where anything, and well, a season really, that anything can happen, the athletes are just looking for every opportunity to compete. So they're just getting back into the mindset after their World Cup opener events early December. Unfortunately, due to COVID-19, these are closed events. We ask spectators or people interested in watching to follow our social media channels. We're trying to keep the community and everyone safe by, you know, not risking exposure with lots of people at the park. So we're excited to have competition. Sad we can't have people cheering us on. But, you know, again, it's just incredible to be able to host competition this year. So that's exciting for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then with the free ski and snowboard teams?
Yeah. So that crew is finally getting some competition under their belt this year. The new year marks the return of the Fisk Park and Pipe World Cup season. We have Big Air set to go down January 7th through 9th. This is at the 2015 World Championship venue in Austria. Three women and 14 men will represent us in the second free ski and the first snowboard World Cup of the season. And athletes are just amped to get back at it after some cancellations of events in November and December. Athletes competing include Park City area local Alex Hall. He's the 2019 Visa Big Air champion. Mac Forehand is making his return to competition from ACL surgery about a year ago. And two-time Olympic medalist Nick Gepper, another Park City area free skier, is also set to compete. So really excited to see some competition under those teams' belts in the new year.
Okay. And then coming up this week, you've got an avalanche awareness online program. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Brass Avalanche Foundation is hosting an online event, an evening with Off-Piste. This is January 5th, 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. It's an hour-long event that includes a screening of Off-Piste and a panel discussion. And so January 5th has been declared the annual Bryce and Ronnie Avalanche Safety Day to preserve the memories of Bryce Astle and Ronnie Burlak, two aspiring young ski racers that were tragically killed in an avalanche during a training camp in Austria. In honor of the inaugural day, which is, I believe that's Tuesday, tomorrow, there's an online panel which features discussions with athletes and avalanche experts, including Park City area local Ted Ligety. You can register online for this event at brassavalanche.org.
Okay. And then just lots of travel, lots of movement between the teams, lots of close interaction. Talk to us a little bit about some of the COVID-19 practices that the ski and snowboard world has embraced this winter season.
Yeah, so I'm actually currently calling from our USANA Center of Excellence. I'm doing a PCR test myself to be able to go to those aerial events I mentioned. And our strategies have come down to some basic concepts of double testing teams into bubbles. So that includes a PCR test before leaving a home location and a PCR test arriving at a camp and competition, as well as testing throughout the duration of the camp or the competition block, as well as our isolation and disinfection strategies, which, you know, includes physical distancing from those outside immediate households. It's USC and Silver policy for athletes to wear masks when they're training and competing, you know, obviously not on hill during competition, but anytime outside of that. And we also do daily and weekly symptom monitoring, which has helped catch any potential cases early on to implement isolation strategies and, you know, be able to test and go from there based on the results of that test. So we're also, you know, we worked closely with European ministries and local governments to be able to gain access to Europe. A lot of that is due to being able to travel under a business sports exemption. So all athletes are, you know, really, and staff have adopted these policies and practices. It's kind of become the new normal, as I'm sure everyone is used to a new normal. And it's a bit more isolating than, you know, athletes and staff are used to when they're in training and competition. But the main focus is to be able to train and compete. So everyone is really bought into the process. And we've had many successful camps since May 2020. We've run 50 national, international, and international training camps and competitions involving over 1,000 athletes and staff in 8 countries. So our strategies are working, and, you know, we continue to stay diligent. And as things develop and change, we will develop and change. And hopefully 2021 brings a semblance of some normalcy with, you know, medical developments and things like that. So as of now, what we're doing is working well, and we're, again, just grateful to be training and competing out in the world.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
No, just, you know, thanks again, Leslie, and to the Park City community for your support. We're just happy to be doing, you know, what we love to do, and hope everyone had a safe, happy, and healthy new year.
All right. You too. Thanks, Laura. Laura Carlton with U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Well, with 2020 finally coming to a close, people turn to forms of art and culture to get through the tumultuous year. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has more on which books were this year's most turned to.
While some people turned to escapism for help with the unprecedented year, others wanted to embrace some of the hardships that 2020 presented. Kate Mapp, the adult services librarian at the Park City Library, says they saw an increased demand in print and ebooks, particularly with hot-selling titles, which comes as no surprise. She says there were common themes in the kinds of books people were checking out.
So it's almost like we are searching as a community through our checkouts, searching for, you know, humanity, and, you know, how to work through these challenges.
Two of the most popular titles, she says, are Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind by Yuval Noah Harari, and Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell. And librarian Katrina Kamak, who handles youth services, says younger audiences were also interested in reading about current political issues, focusing on racial injustice and police brutality.
Speaking for especially the teen books, you know, with Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, an awareness of social injustice, and also like the perfect storm of some really excellent books about social justice coming out and being published, I think that's been an area of interest for our community.
Kamak says one book that resurfaced was Stamped, Racism, Anti-Racism, and You by Jason Reynolds. Another popular YA book was The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. Adults who were looking for escapism literature turned to fiction books like The Dutch House by Ann Patchett, according to Mapp.
That's a story of a brother and sister and how their lives are connected through the Dutch house throughout their entire lives. And what's fun about that book is that the audiobook is narrated by Tom Hanks. So it's kind of a fun treat.
She says The Giver of Stars by Jojo Moyes is another top checked out book of 2020. And for younger audiences, Kamak says graphic novels offer an immersive, fun read.
I have found that picking up a graphic novel too is a great way to typically read through a book pretty quickly and just really get immersed in the beautiful artwork and the story as well. So that's been a fun way to kind of have a quick binge read. Also, reading books intended for a younger audience sometimes can lighten the mood a little bit.
For teens and tweens, she suggests The Prince and the Dressmaker by Jen Wang, which is expected to have a movie release in the next year or so. And for younger kids, Kamak suggests local author Shannon Hale, who wrote the Real Friends series. Mapp says adult readers looking for local authors can turn to Ed Power, who wrote Dragon in the Snow, a nonfiction book released earlier this year.
This book won the National Outdoors Book Award this year, and it's a great narrative. So rather than, you know, an instructional guidebook about how to protect yourselves around the mountains during avalanche danger, this is more of a narrative about the rescuers and the forecasters and kind of the behind the scenes aspects to avalanches.
She says readers who prefer fiction should check out Phyllis Barber's The Desert Between Us, which follows Sophia Hughes, a hat maker and the third wife of a polygamist. And this year, Kamak and Map suggest readers keep their eyes open for new books from established authors like Taylor Jenkins Reid, Kristen Hammer, and Ta-Nehisi Coates. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
It's 8:48 now. Good morning. Well, the Christian Center of Park City not only offers food and financial help to those in need, the center also staffs a counseling and wellness center. The director is Leah Harder. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. So if you would just give us an overview of the center, the number of therapists you have, the hours that you're open.
Yeah, sure. So we have really expanded in the last few years just because of the increase in mental health need. We have 9 therapists right now, 2 coaches, one is an Enneagram coach and one is a health coach, and a psychiatric nurse practitioner that are all a part of our team. We see clients Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. even into 8 o'clock at night. So we want to find a way to make it work for people. A misnomer that people think that maybe because the Christian Center is so good with the food pantry that we just see those that have financial need. But in reality, we see people from all different socioeconomic backgrounds, people that do use our scholarship funds, which we gave out more last year than we ever have before to those that have insurance and that can afford the full fee. So lots of availability and options for those coming from all different backgrounds.
Okay. So what is the fee? Just a base based on what you make or whether or not you have insurance?
Yeah, so the each therapist has different rates depending on their experience and their training. So we have a counseling intern, Katie Thomas, and she sees folks for $50 a session. And then we have some of us that have been in the field for a long time that their regular rate is more like $150. But by and large, the majority of folks use their insurance. So we're contracted with Select Health, most of our therapists are, with Aetna, Blue Cross Blue Shield. So we try to work with insurance companies. And then we do have a scholarship fund, so if somebody is unable to afford the regular fee, and Katie Thomas works with a lot of teens, if she's not a good fit for somebody, then we have a scholarship application that they just have to fill out, and then we can talk about what they might be able to do for, you know, 5 to 6 sessions to at least get people started.
Yeah. And you mentioned you really expanded. Was that as a result of kind of the COVID? I mean, what kind of differences did you see just between 2020 and 2019?
Yeah. Oh, boy. We have seen a huge increase in the number of sessions just for adults. Total, we've seen a 34% increase in 2020 versus 2019. Our scholarship usage, 85% increase in the need for scholarship insurance, using scholarship assistance. We had people that had insurance, and then when COVID hit, they lost their benefits or their employment, and so then they needed to continue in therapy to stabilize, and we had to pull from our scholarship funds. So 85% increase. And then we've seen an increase in working with teens and kids, I think partly because we added a play therapist and 2 therapists that work with teens. So we saw a 24% increase in that. So just increased need in our community. People have really struggled. This has been just as hard mental health-wise. It's been my biggest concern for people with going through this pandemic. There's so many factors that have caused people to be isolated and lonely and anxious. And it's been really tough for folks.
So can you talk just a little bit about why it's helpful to go see kind of a stranger who really, you know, not your friend, may not really care about you other than they're doing their job, as opposed to like reaching out to your friends and family for help?
Yeah, that's a great question that I get asked often. You know, there comes a point where you've talked to your friends, maybe you've talked to your family so much, and they're so close to the situation. They love you. They're biased towards the situation, that talking to someone neutral that's outside of it can be hugely helpful. The other is that we do see clients that they can't talk to anybody else. They really, whatever's going on to them is so private that they don't feel comfortable sharing it with a good friend. So talking to a professional, again, that is trained in mental health issues that is trained specifically in helping with relationship issues and can come alongside them and just be a sounding board and, you know, give them tools if needed and give support. None of us can go through this alone, and having that outside support is a huge resource to use.
Yeah. So what's your forecast for 2021? Do you expect to see the numbers at that, you know, increased level by almost a third? By more than
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we're looking to hire more staff to our team just because most of our team has waiting lists, sadly. And I hope that wouldn't deter anyone from getting help. Call, get on the waiting list, and let's hope we can get people in. But we'll add to our team. I'd like to add more therapists. Our coaches have been a really nice supplement because we can work with somebody in therapy, say on an anxiety issue, but then maybe they want to transfer to do health coaching to address it from a health perspective, how their dietary changes might be able to impact the anxiety that they're facing. So our team is helping and working together. We'll do some more collaborative work. We've always been huge on doing preventative support for people. We have an Enneagram has been a huge need in our community. The Enneagram is a personality inventory, a way to know yourself that helps you learn more about your motivations and why you do things and can help you understand how you relate then to your spouse or people in your family or even coworkers. So the Enneagram coaching, she does typing sessions. Mary Wright does typing sessions where she can help you figure out what your Enneagram personality type is. And then she will offer webinars. We've offered free webinars last year and we'll continue to do that. And then she's excited, even in May, we plan to do a retreat. We're looking at offering a grief group coming up here in a few weeks in January. And we also did some trail work last year with self-awareness and team building, trail experiences, and we hope to do some more of that, just preventative, because we know that everybody needs that extra support and resources and just getting out and be able to take care of yourself in nature is a good way to do it. So we have lots planned for webinars and for those types of seminars, and are very excited for the new year to be able to come alongside people.
People can find out more about that, what, just on the website?
Yeah, yep. And in fact, we're going to be launching counseling. It's going to be launching their own social media this year. So you want to be a follower. That should be posted in the next few weeks for counseling. The Christian Center does post, you know, every day on different subjects. So you could follow on social media, or absolutely the website has all of the calendar of events and what's coming up.
Okay. And then back to the counseling, then you have bilingual therapists.
Yes, we do have Dr. Claire Camp. She's a psychologist that is bilingual. And then we also have a case manager, Kendall Luckrich. And we have also been partnering with another organization that can do short-term counseling, Latino Behavioral Health. Claire is super full with a waiting list. And so we have people that want to get in, need to get in right away. If they need to talk to someone right away, our case manager, she's bilingual, Kendall Luckrich, can meet with them right away and talk with them about what's going on, and then even get started with Carla with Latino Behavioral Solutions until they can get into someone like Claire on our team.
Okay. Now, are all these one-on-one, or do you guys also do couples counseling?
Yep, we do couples as well. And people ask, are we doing sessions in person or virtually? We do have a therapist that is, and the Enneagram coach, they're exclusively through telehealth, through virtual sessions. And then many of us are also doing sessions in person, but we're really flexible. If somebody would rather be in their home and has the way to do it through their computer or their phone, we're open to doing in person or through the telehealth option. Couples are definitely an option. We can do couples, we can do teens, parents and their teens together, and we can do adults just individually.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Leah?
Well, Well, just that this is the start of a new year. And, you know, I think a lot of folks were probably thinking, okay, 2021, I can't wait for the new start. And yet even myself, I woke up and was like, well, it's really not that much different. And so that just in and of itself can affect people's mental health. Just the discouragement that this pandemic is lasting for so long. And so I just say, give yourself some support. Find someone to talk to. Reach out, use your community resources, and we're happy to be one of them.
Okay, Leah Harder is a therapist and director of the Christian Center of Park City's Counseling and Wellness Center. Thanks so much for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Leslie. Have a good week.
Well, Sundance is canceling the only live screening venue in Park City for the 2021 Film Festival. The festival is scheduled to run on a shortened duration, January 28th through February 3rd. Virtual online film screenings will be held throughout the 7 days. However, there will be no live screening events held in Park City. Sundance organizers announced the cancellation for health and safety reasons, with COVID-19 spiking, with case counts reaching dangerous levels. The 10-day Sundance Film Festival typically brings in thousands of people from the film industry, along with fans and volunteers. Since the 1980s, Park City has hosted the event, bustling with traffic, throngs of visitors, and industry deal-making. The economic impact on Utah estimated at some $200 million. Early in December, Sundance Managing Director Betsy Wallace told KPCW that they did plan to have one Park City live venue at the Ray. The plan was to limit seating and to disinfect the theater between each film. The Ray can hold more than 500 people. The plan would have limited seating to no more than 50. The Sundance announcement last week said that they have made case-by-case health and safety evaluations in all of the satellite screen locations, and they have pivoted to online shows where public health dictates that in-person gathering is not advisable. Festival goers can participate online with all films, including premiere screenings, which include live Q&As with the artists and filmmakers. On January 7th, Sundance will launch its ticket sales for films and activities. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City.